This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And certainly this program is very important for all people, because all people must have the right to defend their own culture, their own civilization, their own values, their own religious beliefs, their own way of life, and even the very character of their people, the genetic character of their people for that matter, the way they look, the way they feel, the values they have. There's nothing wrong with China being Chinese or Japan being Japanese and preserving their way of life in every aspect of the Japanese people or of the Chinese people or of the Malaysian people or, for that matter, the European people. Everyone should have a right to preserve the things that are important to them, and that's more than natural. That's the way of nature. It's the way of life. There are different races and peoples and ethnic groups upon the planet, and the truth is that when each ethnic group, each race is allowed to pursue its heritage and preserve its heritage and live in a society of its own people, there's a lot less problems in the world. The greatest source of wars and other sorts of conflicts that exist on the face of the earth, the destruction of so many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of lives across the earth, has been ethnic conflict. And right now, we have a huge ethnic conflict going on in the Middle East. And it's flaring up right now with the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. But the Israeli invasion of Lebanon is not something that just came out of thin air. And it's not a reaction to the so-called kidnapping of two Israeli soldiers. They were captured. Israel has captured thousands and thousands of Lebanese, both military and civilians, over the last few years. Put them into prisons, into dungeons, tortured them. Israel has invaded Lebanon before this latest event in the early 1980s. They killed 20,000 civilians at least, as Robert Fisk said, which I just recently heard him say. He saw with his own eyes the thousands of bodies in Beirut from that invasion, the 17,000 people in Beirut, mostly civilians who were killed. He saw the bodies at Sabra and Shatila, the massacre which Ariel Sharon oversaw. So Israel, what's going on right now in Lebanon, you can't look at it as just an individual event. You've got to look at it over the last period of 50 years. Israel was founded by ethnic cleansing. That's right, ethnic cleansing. And by the way, after Israel invaded Lebanon, and this we're talking now about something that's 35 years ago, the United Nations Security Council voted, which included, by the way, the vote of the United States, for Israel to vacate the occupied territories. The war was over. The war was ended. Israel had no right to be there. They were there and they stayed there so they could, in fact, confiscate, take the land of the Palestinian people on the West Bank and build all Jewish-only settlements. And by the way, that's called racism and segregation in the rest of the world, but if a Jew does it, there hardly seems to be a peep about it around the planet. They literally have violated United Nations resolution. We went to war, remember, against Iraq for violating United Nations resolutions. The United States also voted for that resolution. But here you go. Everything is special for Israel. I saw a recent documentary about propaganda in the Middle East and about how that the media is so biased in favor of Israel over the Palestinians, and everything from terminology and every aspect. In fact, I'm going to put a link on my website about that documentary. And the documentary, to me, was very, very powerful. And it showed the incredible bias of what goes on in the world. The one thing I would complain about in the documentary, is the fact that they basically talked about the control of the American press, but they didn't dare simply say that a great portion of the American press is in fact controlled owned, directed, produced by Israelis themselves. Not Israelis, let's put it this way, by Jewish supremacists, by Jewish extremists. And that certainly has to be a factor in the media. They did point out very well how Jewish pressure groups basically keep the media in line. That if the media dares to report fairly in the Middle East, these people can lose their jobs. They put incredible pressure in advertising. They put pressure, commercial pressure on the networks. But for some reason, they left out that fact. And that's what I see over the years, is that there's so many people that are not willing to confront the complete aspect of the problem. Today, I'm going to go into Chapter 8, The Roots of Antisemitism II, Crime and Treachery. And as you know, in Chapter 7, I talked about the roots of antisemitism, and I pointed out that antisemitism has essentially been defined by radical Jews over the years, by radical extremist Jews. They've told us what antisemitism is, and now, of course, they define it as anyone even who opposes the Israeli state, imposes the illegal occupation of Palestine. And again, like I said, the United Nations resolution, Security Council resolution, which was voted for 35 years ago for Israel to vacate the West Bank and Gaza, has still not been abided by Israel, and we've done nothing about it. In fact, we've supported Israel with billions of dollars and also incredible amounts of weapons and all sorts of terrible weapons that Israel has used to slaughter literally tens of thousands of people in the Middle East. Another point, too, that I'd like to make is that we also tried, America says, and we're a signee of the Geneva Convention, and we believe we follow the Geneva Convention. And in the Geneva Convention, it's very clear that it is illegal for a nation to invade another or to go to war with another and then ethnically cleanse or simply to move in its own citizens to colonize or take over the land of the invaded nation. So Israel, again, is in violation of international law. But, of course, Israel gets away with it. And, of course, as I always say, they always use the excuse of talking about terrorism. And the truth is, Israel is the greatest terrorist threat in the world today. Israel is the source of terrorism. Israel was a nation created by terrorism. And Israel, when you see those, next time you see even CNN or ABC or CBS, and they show you the F-16s and other Israeli fighter jets dropping 1,000-pound high explosive bombs on apartment buildings and across and pounding the Lebanese people with artillery, which is, by the way, is not something that you can direct exactly. That's a general area. So anybody living even in the areas, even within hundreds of yards or kilometers away, is liable to be blown to bits. And ladies and gentlemen, that's terror. If you're on the ground and you live in, and your family is in a home or your family is in a business and there, you know, the night is filled with percussions, massive explosions that will rip your baby's bodies apart and your bodies apart, and the threat of these things landing upon you, that is true terrorism. And Israel is the greatest purveyor of that today. Well, let's go right into Chapter 8, The Roots of Antisemitism II, Crime and Treachery, and we will talk about some of the aspects, the negative aspects of Jewish extremism over the centuries, and of course in current times as well, and why there is a reaction to it that's called anti-Semitism. Here we go. I grew up on movies. I never failed to go to the Saturday matinee, and over the years, movies have been my main form of entertainment. My idea of an evening out is still dinner and a movie. Of the hundreds of films I've seen over the years, I have many recollections of gangster films. Because of those films and many newspaper and magazine articles and novels, I long associated organized crime with Italians, specifically with Sicilian Americans. It is a common association. Gangsters are synonymous in almost everyone's mind with Italian features and Italian accents. One makes an almost automatic subliminal connection between the gangsters and spaghetti. In high school, I came across an article about Murder Incorporated, a huge criminal syndicate based in New York City that was one of the most evil and powerful crime organizations in the history of the United States. It specialized in murder for hire and ran every kind of criminal racket, generating hundreds of deaths and the theft of tens of millions of dollars. Thomas Dewey, later a presidential candidate, helped break up the organization. The cast of characters of Murder Incorporated amazed me, for they were almost all Jews. Its original members became the leaders of organized crime throughout the 1980s and included crime boss Meyer Lansky. I then read that the biggest boss of organized crime since the time of Al Capone was in fact Jewish. I thought he'd be Sicilian as depicted in the movies. The book Lansky by Hank Messick documented a view of organized crime far different than I saw at my Saturday matinees. The top law enforcement sources and investigative reporters agree that Lansky was the master gangster in America for most of the 20th century. He had been the most powerful person in the American crime syndicates for four decades, yet most Americans, who certainly know the names of Al Capone and John Dillinger, have never heard of Meyer Lansky. The most notorious gangster was not Italian. He was, in fact, Jewish and an ardent supporter of Zionism. Here's a quotation from Newsweek magazine. Each year, Lansky and his underworld associates pour vast sums into Israeli bonds and Israeli philanthropies. As the Daily Haaretz saw it, the government seemed afraid of losing the millions of dollars in illicit money first laundered in mob-controlled institutions and then funneled into Israeli business and industry. Investigative reporter Jack Anderson talked about the issue in the Washington Post. The underworld boodle, much of it raised from nefarious enterprises in the United States, is laundered before it arrives in Israel. In Lansky, Messick reveals the relationship between Israeli and American Jewish gangsters. Quote, certainly Jewish gangsters have long and openly supported Jewish causes and the State of Israel. On the night Lansky's ex-partner Bugsy Siegel was executed, the Flamingo is taken over by Mo Sedgway. When asked how he so conveniently happened to be in Las Vegas, he explained he was there to arrange United Jewish Appeal Fund Drive. As an illustration of how Jewish gangsters are treated in Hollywood media, one only has to look at the treatment according to the notorious gangster Bugsy Siegel in the film Bugsy. The film downplayed his Jewishness and portrayed one of America's most bloodthirsty and merciless murderers as a handsome and playful romantic, a man of vision. And he was portrayed by the thoroughly Anglo-Saxon-looking Warren Beatty. Siegel was portrayed as a kind-hearted man who had a somewhat rough side. And even though I was familiar with the horrible deeds of the real Bugsy Siegel, while watching the movie, I found myself liking him. It did not surprise me to learn that the film had been written by James Toback and directed by Barry Levinson. Messick sums it up very well when he writes, and I quote, the real leaders of crime have remained hidden while the nation's law enforcement agencies have chased minor punks. Research reveals that non-mafia leaders of crime have been hiding behind the vendetta-ridden society for decades. I have been smeared as an anti-Semite from coast to coast by gangsters who use religion as a cloak. The next section is Russian Revolution and or Russian Mafia. And by the way, for documentation, go to my hardback copy of Jewish Supremacism or the online copy you can buy through davidduke.com. And you can check out every quotation that I give here and every documentation that I offer in this book. This section is called Russian Revolution and or Russian Mafia. In the final years of the 20th century, the most dangerous criminal organization in the United States and all over the world is the Russian Mafia. Much like the truth about the so-called Russian Revolution, the Russian Mafia is neither Russian nor Mafia. In a word, it's Jewish. Just as the media downplayed the huge role of Jewish organized crime in America throughout the 20th century, from Murder Incorporated to Meyer Lansky's Syndicate, so they have hidden from the American people the truth about the modern crime syndicate called the Organizacija, the most powerful criminal organization in the world. The members of the Organizacija come from the parts of the former Soviet Empire, but they don't identify themselves as Russian, and certainly not as Italian mafia. They are exceedingly proud Jews who support Jewish causes with the same exuberance shown by Meyer Lansky and his cohorts. In the mid-1970s, I read Hustling on Gorky Street, a book written by Yuri Brokhin, a former Jewish pimp from one of the crime organizations in Russia. Konstantin Simas, a prominent Jewish lawyer for organized crime, wrote another important book on the subject called USSR, The Corrupt Society. Now, both books make clear the Jewish control of organized crime in the Soviet Union. Brokhin brags that Jews are the only ones intelligent enough to run large-scale organized crime. Slavs, he says, are capable only of street crime. Of course, neither book mentions the advantages of Jewish criminals having allies in the heavily Jewish Soviet bureaucracy. When the communist regime fell, the already powerful Jewish crime groups grew dramatically, so much so that it could be said that no nation has ever suffered more in the grip of organized crime than Russia does today. Even the former Russian president, Boris Yeltsin, was clearly under the thumb of organized crime, as evidenced by his appointment of Jewish organized crime boss figure, Boris Berezovsky, to Russia's National Security Council. Yeltsin had to rescind Berezovsky's appointment after some of Russia's non-Jewish newspapers made an issue of his crime connections. Berezovsky is thought to be the richest person in Russia, followed closely by his fellow tribesman Vladimir Gruzinsky, who has become the most powerful media boss. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, the Jewish mob spread rapidly all over the world, and many authorities and law enforcement now considered its American branch as the most powerful and dangerous crime organization in America. After the murder of comedian Bill Cosby's son in Los Angeles, the press identified the alleged murderer as Mikhail Markasev, a Ukrainian immigrant, when in fact he was a Jewish member of the so-called Russian Mafia. Invariably, Jewish film and television producers portray the gangsters as blonde, blue-eyed Russians with not even a scant suggestion of their real Jewish identity. Casting these Jewish criminals as Russians is a double lie. It is inaccurate as to their Jewish origin, and it's a libel against the Russian people. Again, the contradictions of Jewish power come to the fore. The masters of the media will not tolerate a truthful expose of Jewish perfidy, yet they perpetrate false and pernicious images of others. Occasionally, though, the truth breaks out, even if it's not in the movies. The Village Voice on May 26, 1998, ran a story called, quote, "The Most Dangerous Mobster in the World" by Robert Friedman, by the way, another fellow Jew who has had the courage and temerity to write about the Jewish control of organized crime. Here's the quotation. According to the FBI and Israeli intelligence, Semen Moglevich rules over an arms trafficking, money laundering, drug running, and art smuggling Red Mafia, the most dangerous mobster in the world. The leader of the Red Mafia is a 52-year-old Ukrainian-born Jew. He is a shadowy figure known as the Brainy Don. He holds an economics degree, and he's never been exposed by the media. Unquote. Robert Friedman, himself Jewish, writes that the Organizacija has even brought in ex-commandos from Israel as gunmen, and they are so ruthless that some policemen will not work the cases because they so often go after a cop's family. Friedman goes on to write, and I quote, "Jewish organizations have lobbied the Justice Department to downplay the Russian mob, fearing that adverse publicity will jeopardize the mass exodus of Russian Jews to Israel," unquote. Well, as well it might. But what about the exodus of Russian mafia Jews to America? Obviously, there's no concern about that. For the interest of the Israeli state to augment its Jewish population and the sacred interests of Jewish public relations are far more important than the rights of the people of the United States to defend themselves from this horrific Jewish organized crime syndicate. The Jewish 2% of the population have the dubious distinction of producing the lion's share of organized crime in America in the 20th century, from Murder Incorporated to Lansky Syndicate to the Russian mafia of Semyon Mogilevich. The hidden fact suggests the possibility of similar behavior in former times.
Well, that's the end of the first part of Chapter 8 of The Origins of Antisemitism, Crime and Treachery. And tomorrow we'll begin to go into the historical aspects of Jewish organized crime all the way back to the Roman times. So it's quite an interesting section. And well, that's the end of Chapter... Well, that's the end of the first part of Chapter 8, The Origins of Antisemitism, Crime and Treachery. And tomorrow we'll begin to go into that historical record of organized crime, showing that it's not simply a problem of the 21st century or the 20th century, but a problem that's been existing for literally thousands of years in relationships to other people. And I will quote from some of the main philosophers and historians, writers, and personalities of history concerning the Jewish role in organized crime. We'll also begin to deal deeply into how these organized criminals have controlled the media. And I'll go into Russia and talk about how Jewish organized crime figures actually control and have controlled a great deal of the media in Russia. We'll go into the slave trade. You know, European mankind is taking on a quite arduous guilt trip for slavery. But the Jewish people have had a role in slavery that has been paramount over the last 2,000 years. And I'm talking about something documented by Jewish sources. And again, we'll go into that in tomorrow's program. I look forward to being with you and continue to help me get this message out to the world. It's your responsibility as much as it is mine. We know the truth here, but it's a question of going out there and convincing our friends, our neighbors, our family, one person at a time. If we do that, we can certainly change the world. I appreciate your support. Your support makes possible this program. It makes possible my work and lectures and other publishing and other endeavors all over the world. Thanks so much. I appreciate you, and I look forward to being with you tomorrow for the second part of the 8th chapter, The Origins of Antisemitism, Crime and Treachery.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.com.